Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara here is dealing with the pasuk from Parshat Mishpatim, which says, "Ki yaver ish sadeu cherem v'shilachet biro ubi'er b'steacher meitav sadeu meitav kamo yishalem." So here again, we have verbs that are used in the pasuk, and the Gemara is trying to discover the meaning of these verbs. We have the verb of ubi'er, and we have the verb of v'shilach. So the Gemara wants to know what type of damage, what type of problem is being caused by v'shilach, and what is caused by bi'er. So Gemara brought psukim to substantiate their position with regards to each of them, that v'shilach means regel, and that the Gemara brought from the pasuk of mishalche regel ashor v'achamor. Pasuk in Yeshayahu was describing a good life, about people who are going to have fields that are full of water, and mishalche regel ashor v'achamor, and then they have their animals that are either drinking or working in the fields. So there's mishalche regel. You see the verb shilach is used together with regel. And therefore, the Gemara associates v'shilach here with the nezik of regel. And then we had ubi'er. We brought the pasuk of kesher yiv'er agalal adtumo. Here the Navi is telling Yeravam ben Nevat, because he did not fulfill the dream that Hashem had in his breaking away from Yehuda, that he would establish a more ethical, moral kingdom in the north. Instead, he did much worse and introduced Avodah Zarah, and therefore Hashem promises him that he will be wiped out entirely, and all of his offspring will be wiped out. And then the final point is Kashi Yivera Galala Tumo, that will be wiped out completely and utterly. And here the word Galal, Rashi brings down, we saw yesterday two interpretations, Rabbeinu Hanano brings a different interpretation to show us how that is associated with Shane, and here we see again the verb bi'er to mean shane. So that was the Gemara's conclusion, that v'shilach is regel, ubi'er is shane. Then the Gemara said, wait a minute, had I not had the pasuk to teach me that v'shilach is regel, then what do I would have thought what the word shilach means? There's no other option. Karen I already have, shane I already have. What are you left with when you're looking for nezek? So then the Gemara says, no, because there are two aspects of Shein that could have been mentioned in the Pasuk, and maybe the Pasuk was speaking about Shein in these two manifestations. One manifestation of Shein is the Mechalia Karno, is where they wipe out everything that is there, and another one is where they get Hana'ah without wiping it out. You saw the Machloket Rashi and Tosafot as to the meaning of Mechalia Karno, whether that means to eat something that will grow back, versus Tosafot, who thinks it means to get hana, to roll around in the item, but it's still there afterwards. The Gemara in the end says, that's why we needed the pasuk to teach us v'shilach means regel. But then the Gemara is left in a bind, which is, okay, once you've established that there are two types of shein, where do I learn out those two types of shein from? Because I only have one pasuk now for shein. The answer is that the juxtaposition, the smichot, or the hekesh, between regel and shein, because they're found in the same pasuk, teaches me, just like by regel it makes no difference, so too by shein it makes no difference. How do you know by regel it makes no difference? Here the Rashba says, because, stam, when an animal walks and tramples on something, it doesn't, mechalia karna, it doesn't wipe the thing out, it doesn't eliminate the item. Most likely the item is still there, it's just damaged or ruined. So therefore regel is most likely in a case where, delo mechalia karna. And so therefore, Shein also would be a manifestation of the Lo Mechalya Karno. And obviously, the Lo Mechalya Karno, then obviously Mechalya Karno, for sure, you're going to be Chayav. That's where we left off. And now, 11 lines down on Gimel Med Aleph, the Gemara is now going to do the opposite with regards to Regel and Shein, which is the opposite now with regards to Shein. Amamar, Ubi'er Zoha Shein, V'cheinu Amer, Kashi Yiv'er Aglal Ad Tumo, Taima Dichtav Rachmana Kashi Yiv'er Aglal Ad Tumo. Had it not been for this pasuk in Melachim Aleph, we would have not known that the word vi'er means shame. Halav achi, b'mayu gimna lo. Had you not had that proof pasuk, what would you have darshened from that word ubi'er? E keren, k'tiv. If you're talking about keren, we already had that before. Ki gach, ki gof. E regel, k'tiv. If it's regel, we have vishilach. We already have that. Itzrich. Salkadat chamina idi v'idi regel. I would have thought both ubi'er and v'shilach are referring to the nezek of regel. Hadazmil memela, hadashalach shluchei. Because there are two different manifestations of regel. One is where the animal wanders off by itself and then goes and tramples in the area. Another one is where the balim send the animal into that area in order to do damage. So I would have thought that Ubier and Bishilach would be a manifestation of sending it in, and Ubier would be the case where it goes by itself, and I would have used the whole Pasuk for Regel and not for Shein. Kamash Malon, that, no, don't use that word for Regel, but rather use it for Shein. Vahashta Duki Shein, now that you already established that the Pasuk of Vier is talking about Shein, Regel Dazlam and Mela Minolan. How do you know if the animal goes by itself that you really are culpable? Do me the Shein, like Shein. Ma Shein Loshna Shalchash Luche, Loshna Dazlam and Mela. There it makes no difference whether he sent it in or whether it happened by itself. Avrego loshna shalchash luche, loshna azla memela. Makes no difference. Now here it's hard to understand why by Shane you say that it doesn't matter. Meaning that in the case of rego, we explained, like the Rashba said, that rego, the normal case of rego is a case where it tramples on something and the item is still intact. So that's why it's dolomachaya karno. Over here by Shane, how do you know that it's, that he sent it versus that it went by itself? Hagmar says, oh, there's no difference between them by Shein, so too by Regel, there's no difference. How do you know that? So the answer might be the verb that is used, which is that the verb used by Regel is Vishilach, which indicates sending actively, versus Ubier, which doesn't opine on how it happened. It simply says Ubier, that it was eliminated. So maybe that is the reason why Shein, we do not differentiate. The Rashba on Bet Amud Bet says, interestingly enough, he has a problem with the Pasuk, which he says the Gemara never really addresses, which is the Pasuk begins, Ki Yaver Ish Sedeo Cherem. What? Nobody asks about the verb in the beginning of the Pasuk. It only asks about, after that point, where it says Vishilach Ubier, those two verbs, what do they mean? But the beginning of the Pasuk begins, Ki Yaver Ish Sedeo Cherem. How come that's not asked by the Gemara? What does that mean? So the Rashba speculates that maybe Ki Yaver over there is also referring to Shane, and you actually have two verbs in the Pasuk that deal with Shein. It says you have two verbs by Shein. That's why you know Shein doesn't matter if you sent it. That doesn't matter if it goes by itself, because you have two Pesukim there. And once you have those two Pesukim, then when you compare Regel to it, that's how you know that Shein were indifferent between the manner in which the animal got there. So that's interesting in the Rashba that he does that, because he's trying to deal with the superfluous word Ki Yaver in the Pasuk, which the Gemara never addresses. It doesn't read as simply into the Gemara, because the Gemara doesn't seem to bring that up at all, but that's where the Rashba deals with this. So now the Gemara says, V'lichtov rachmana v'shilach, v'lo bayi ubier. Let us just have the Pasuk write the verb v'shilach, and not write the word v'er at all. D'mashma regel u'mashma shein. Because the word shilach, that verb is used in both cases, meaning it's used both to mean regel, it's also used to mean shein. Mashma regel d'chtiv, it has the meaning of regel, like we already saw. We bought the pasuk mishachei regel ashor v'achamor. Umash meshein dichtiv b'shin be'imot ashalach bam. That's the pasuk in Azino when Hashem is talking about the terrible things that would befall the people. It says b'shin be'imot ashalach bam. I will send the teeth of the animals into them, even though that shein isn't necessarily the shein of hana'ah. That's a shein of treifa. But maybe if they're animals that are torfim, these are animals that eat this way, so maybe there is an for them also. But they are these killer animals that are going to eat and destroy the people. So now I have the word shein and regel associated with the verb vishilach. So just write the word vishilach, and I'll learn both of them out of the word vishilach. When it says, ilav kray yateira, havamina oha, oha. Had it not been for the extra v'er, I would have thought the word shilach means either this one, or that one, not both. O regel de chezeko matsue. Either regel because it's commonplace. It's a normal behavior that is frequently occurring. O shein de yeshanala zeko. Or shein because there is hana'a. There is benefit out of its hezek. So Gemara says, okay. Michde shkulim heim. They're equal. So this is somewhat along those lines of your question, which is, there's not much difference between Shein and Regel. Each one has a particular character to it, or trait to it, but in the end, you could call them equal because one has this Chumrah, one has that Chumrah, and that means that I have no reason to believe the word of Ishilach, and the Pasuk means one over the other. I have now the option of including one, or including the other. I don't know which one to do. So the Gemara says, oh, pick one, you would have picked one out of the two. The Gemara says, how do you know which one to pick? They're of equal nature. They both have a lot of commonalities between them. Each one of them has a tzad chumra, one little item that is more chamur. And then, how would you know, or how would you distinguish to make a determination as to what to include? So Gemara says, "Michtei shkulim ve'avo shneim." Since they're equal, let them both be learnt out of the pasuk. Dahei minayu mafka, because otherwise, which one would you eliminate? It only would work if you have a logical way to assume that one of them is more chamur than the other. Then you would say that one's included in the pasuk, the other one is not. But in a case where you have no way to differentiate between them, then we're going to assume that the pasuk includes both of them. Here the Rashba asks the question, don't we generally have a principle by mamon, hamotzi michavero alav haraya? So if I have a safek, I have a doubt here as to which one to include, then I would say that the burden of proof is on the victim here to show me that the pasuk includes this, and otherwise the mazik shouldn't have to pay. Why are we assuming that you would include both and basically putting the burden of proof on the mazik and not on the nizak? So he answers, interestingly, not like he did on the previous amud. On the previous amud, the Rashba says, well, nizikin is not exactly mamon, it also includes isur. That there's an isur aspect to mamon, and we know by isur you go to chumra. So that's how we answered up before, how do you know that we wouldn't say chatzi nezek, and we would say nezek shalem, when we come to include an item, when we said there that's muad mitzkilato by the karen ha mechubar. The Gemara says, and then you'd be a muad and you pay nezek shalem. It says, why would you say that? Say that it's chatzi nezek. It said, over there we go to chumra because it's an isur. Nezek involves not only mamon, but also isur. Here he does not answer that. Interesting enough, he could have answered the same way here and said, well, it's tzad isur. Tzad isur is the chumra. So when I have a doubt about which one, I'm going to include both of them. But instead, the Rashba says over here, the answer that's given by the Ran with regards to the safek of reading the Megillah on the 14th or the 15th. When it comes to the city of Tveria, the Gemara has a doubt as to which day you read it because it had three walls and the fourth wall was the Kinneret. So therefore, it doesn't know whether it should read on the 14th or the 15th. The Gemara concludes it should read on both days. The Ran asks the famous question. It's a din derabonon, safek derabonon lekula. So they should not read on both days. Why should they have to read at all? The Ran says we don't invoke the principle of safek derabonon lekula when the result is you won't do anything. Over there, by the case of Megillah, if I were to say safek derabonon lekula, they would end up not reading the Megillah at all, which makes no sense. So now I have to make a decision, 14 to 15. I don't know, you read it on both days. So even though normally the din is safek derabanan lekula, where the safek derabanan lekula will eliminate it completely, we do not say it. Same thing by the Arba Kosot. The Gemara in Psachim says, do we lean for the first two? Do we learn for the second two? There the Gemara doesn't know. Should you learn it, lean in the first two or the second two? Gemara says, since we don't know, you lean for all of them. So the Ran says, you could have said the same thing there also. Safek derabanan lekula, you shouldn't have to lean for all of them. But then you would end up in a situation where you don't lean at all. Meaning you don't accomplish the mitzvah whatsoever. And we won't invoke Safek Derabanan Lekula in that case. So similarly over here, we have one pasuk that can mean both things. If I say you're going to be neither, that means that the pasuk has no meaning anymore. You're not learning anything from the pasuk. That makes no sense. So therefore, the alternate is that I learn both. And that's a better alternative to saying that neither I'll learn from here, because then the pasuk has no drusha or no meaning whatsoever. Now, he didn't use the Isur over here, and the difference might be because of the nature of the Chiyuv. Before, we knew that he was Chayav. We just have a question, is he Chayav Nezek Shalem or Chatzi Nezek? Over there, he invokes the principle and says, well, it's the Isura, it goes to Chumra. Over here, we don't know if you're even Chayav at all. So over here, invoking the principle of Mamon or Isur is not as relevant because here we never even got into the point where we think you're Chayav. We don't know if you're Chayav. And that's why the Rashba uses a different answer over here than the answer that he gave before. Right now, the Gemara says, "Sagadat chamina hanimile hechi dashalach shluchek." I would have thought if you learn both of them out of the word of shilach, which is possible, and we just show that it would be reasonable to do such a thing. The problem is, then you'd only have the verb vishilach, and shilach implies sending in. That would limit or qualify the chiyuv only when the balim send the animal in. But if it went by itself, you would think maybe you should not be culpable in that situation. Kamash Malan, that's what Ubier teaches us. The Ubier shows you that you're culpable even in a case when it goes in, memelo. So now you see the word, meaning of the word Ubier is memelo. That might help before. How does the Gemara know that Shane is Memela? Because it might be the contrast of Bier to Bishilach is what teaches you that. Or we had the Rashbo suggested that we have the word Bier twice in the Pasuk. And Bier, which means to eliminate, to consume. So over there, if you have it twice, one of them might have been Memela. And one of them may be Shaluch Shaluche, because there it says Ki Aver Ish. The person causes the consumption, the elimination. How does he do that? By sending his animal in. So therefore, it might have the meaning of being Vishilach there in that Biur, and the other Biur would be Me'ela. Right now, the Gemara goes back to what's our original question, which is, Rapapa said that we have some Toladot in Nizikin that are Kiyotziben, and some that are Lav Kiyotziben. So the whole purpose of this, we're taking a Braita that tells us what the Avot are. So we had Shor, and then we broke it down. Agama Avot Nimru, Shor, Karen, Shane, Regel. So now we found the sources for Karen, Shane, and Regel. We already dealt with Karen and said, are the Toladot of Karen similar to Karen? The Gemara concluded in the end that they were identical, that they have the same character traits as Karen, and therefore Kiyotziben. So now the Gemara, interrupting the Bright, again, is dealing with Toladah de Shane Mahi. What are the derivatives, the subcategories of Shane? Nitchachacha bikotel lahanata. The animal rubs up against the wall to scratch itself, to get some sort of benefit. It's not bumping the wall to knock the wall over. It's simply using the wall as a way to scratch itself, to rub itself. What ends up happening is that the wall falls down from that behavior. So again, that's a damage that is caused through hana'a, through the animal gaining some pleasure, doing something to pleasure itself. Betinfa perot hanata, or it ruined fruits for its benefit. Rashi explains over here, as well as Rashi, further on, explains that tinfa perot is where it lies down in the perot and rolls around. So it wants to cool itself off, it wants to have that wet feeling, whatever it is that gives the animal this hana'ah, it does it by rolling around in the fruits, which end up ruining the fruits. That's the way Rashi explains it. The Tosafot Riyat Zakein quotes here, it happens to be from the Rabbeinu Hananel, Perush ilu shastat sarcha, hayta mitzta'eret, nefika chayav mipnei, that the tinfa perot anata is a case where the animal relieves itself on the perot. So the hana'a that it's getting is relieving itself. It just happens to do it on top of a bunch of perot. So it's tinfa perot. It ruined, it spoiled the perot by releasing itself on the perot itself. The hana'a that it gets is from the relieving itself. So obviously the machloket revolves around how closely connected the hana'ah has to be to the damage. Rashi clearly sees that hanata has to come directly from the damage, which means that the rolling around itself is what damages it and gives it the hana'ah. Versus the Rabbeinu Hananel's view, which is the hana'ah of relieving itself is not directly connected to the damage, it's a result of his getting that hana'ah. As long as there's hana'ah in the process of the damaging, then that's called shame. So that'd be obviously the machloket between them. Rashi seems more logical. The only reason to favor the Rabbeinu Hananel, why the Rabbeinu Hananel might go in his direction, is because of the word tinfa. Tinfa is usually tinuf. It's to make something disgusting, to ruin it, and is usually associated with zevel or dung. So in the explanation of the words, his makes more sense, even though it's a little more separated in terms of the anaf and the nezek, which Rashi accomplishes through his explanation. So where it says, Maishna shein diesh hana'ala haziko. So now, let's look at Shane as the paradigmatic form of this damage. What are the character traits of it? One is, you get benefit, pleasure out of the damage that is done. Umamoncha, it's your property. Ushmirato alecha, and you're responsible for it. Haninami, these cases as well. Yeshan ala ezekan, the same thing. The hana that they gain is what causes the damage here. Umamoncha, it's your money, it's your possession. Ushmirato alecha, and you're responsible for them. So I don't see any difference between the toladot and the av. Ella, toladah deshein, keshein. We must conclude that the toladot, the subcategories, the derivatives of the av of shein, are just like shein. Todotahem, kiyotzeben. So we haven't found what we're looking for, which is the case where the toladah is not like the av. V'hi kamar rapapa, a toladah deregel. Must be rapapa was speaking about the toladah deregel. Toladah deregel, mahi. What are the derivatives of the subcategories of regel? Ezika begufa terech hilucha. That it did damage while it was walking, but that using its body. in that it's walking along, and as it's walking, it bumps into something, it damages something. Bisara derech hilucha. Its hair, it gets caught, its mane gets caught in something while it's walking. Bishalif shaleha, biprumbia shebepia. If it's with the saddle that is on it, if it's with the bit that it's in its mouth, bzug shebetzavarar, the bell that is around its neck, all of these items, while it's engaged in normal activities, they do damage, not because he's intending for damage, not because he's getting any benefit, simply he's doing what the animal does, which is to move, and to move along. And in doing that, he causes damage. So maishna regel. So again, what are the character traits of the av of the regel? Tehezeko matsui. It's common or frequent type of damage, and damage that is done while it's engaged in normal activities. It's doing things that you would expect from the animal, which is to walk, to move, to swing its tail, move its head, all things that are normal behaviors of the animal, and something that you would expect frequently to happen because of this. Umemomcha, again, it's your money. Ushmirato alecha, and you are responsible for it. Haninami, all of the toladot have that same character trait, which is hezekan matsui, that the hezek is commonplace, frequent. Umemomcha, it's your possession. Ushmiratan alecha, and you are responsible for them. Ela tolada deregel keregel. Must conclude that the subcategories of regel are just like regel. And again, now we've gone through Karen, Shane, and regel, and all of them, toldotehem, kiyotze behen. All of their subcategories are identical to the avot. V'chi kamara papa, atolada debor. Must move on to the next one. He must be speaking about the subcategories of bor. Tolada debor mai nihu. What is a subcategory of bor? Ilema av yud v'tolada tet. If you want to tell me that the av of bor is where it's 10 tfachim deep, and the tolada is tet, where it's 9 tfachim deep. The difference being, and we'll get to this later on in the Gemara here, we'll talk about this in a second, is that once the bor, once the cistern, we'll call it, is 10 tfachim deep, then you have a possibility of killing the animal or anything that falls into it. Chazal determined that that type of death is enough to kill a person or kill an animal, and therefore you are held accountable in that case. 9 tfachim is not deep enough to kill someone or something. It's only deep enough to cause nezek. And therefore you're only responsible for the death of an item when it's 10 tfachim or more deep. You are only responsible for nezek under that level, or for tet tfachim, for 9 tfachim and less. The Gemara says, lo tet ktive, v'lo yud ktive. The pasuk never mentions any measurement whatsoever. So how are you telling me one's an av and one is a tolada? We know that an av usually means something that's written in the Torah. So over here, which one of these is written in the Torah that you tell me that the other one is a tolada? All the pasuk says in the Torah is v'chi yiftach ish bor, o ki yichre ish bor v'lo yichaseno, nafal shama shor chamor, bala bo yishalem kesef yeshiv v'balav, v'meiti yelo. Pasuk just tells you that he opened or he dug something and he caused damage to that. And he's responsible for the damage that he caused. But it doesn't tell you anything about depth of 9 or 10. Halokasha. That's not a problem. There really is. Vameit ielo. Amar Rachmana. The pasuk ends that the carcass belongs to him. Well, if the carcass belongs to him, you know what happened to whatever fell into this boar is that it died. So that means that it has to be deep enough that it was gonna kill. Vikimlo Rabbanan. And the Rabbanan empirically know that Yud Abdan Mita, 10 tfachim deep, it causes death. 10 nizikin abde, Mita lo abde. If it's 9 deep, then it will cause nezek, but it will not cause death. So whenever the Gemara says kim lehu, there's one of two possibilities. Either they have a mesora, that that's the case, or it could mean that they have empirical evidence. Truth is, it might be a combination of both. That they have a mesora, and they also have experience with this, and therefore the two things together make them assume that yud is this way, 9 is that way. But that's what Kim Lehu, we have it in many other places in Shas, where it says Kim Lehu the Rabbanan, that the Rabbanan know, or they establish that this is the case. Sof Sof, the Gemara says, Ze Av the Mita, Ze Av the Nizakin. This is an Av for Mita, the Yud, or the 10 deep. The 9 deep is an Av for Nizakin. They're both an Av, so now I don't have any Toledah to talk about. Now Rashi over here gives two explanations for the Av, and then Tosafot quotes the Yushalmi, which gives a third explanation of how we get to the fact that you have an Av the Mita, and an av nizakin. The truth is, all you have in the pasuk is v'ameiti elo. Ameiti elo shows that the pasuk seemingly is speaking about a case of mita. So I understand how I got an av in terms of mita. How do I end up with an av for nizakin? So Rashi says in the first interpretation, ein ochanami. The only thing you have in the pasuk is av the mita, but there you have v'avhu d'amid diyuka dekra nafka. You can make a diuk out of the pasuk. Vameiti elo says that the pasuk is telling you when it's that deep, you're going to be responsible for mita. But implications over that are that if it was only 9 deep, you would be exempt for killing the animal, but you'd still be responsible for the nezek that happens. Since that is a direct inference from the pasuk, it's as if it's written in the pasuk. And therefore, just like 10 comes out vameiti elo, 9 comes out of the fact that below 10, you're not chayav for the mitah, but you are chayav for the nizakin. That's the way Rashi learns. That's the first way that he says you get 2 avot here. Lishna achrina, he brings a second interpretation. Dechi echi dinaflan mikra bor asara lemitah, naflan bor tet nizakin. We can learn both of them out of the pasuk. Dechtiv v'nafal sham ashor or chamor. That the pasuk says, in describing what transpired after you either opened or you dug this pit, the pasuk says, "Venafal shama shor or chamor." They fell in. Well, when they fall in, there are one or two possibilities as to what happens. When they fell in, they either died, or when they fell in, they got damaged. The fact that the pasuk is ambiguous as to what the resultant problem was, it just says they fell in. So therefore, ben mate ben huzak, balabor yishalem. You are responsible for the animal falling in, whether it dies or whether it is damaged. Vameiti elo comes to teach you that if it falls into something that does not have the ability to kill, then you're not chayav. So vameiti elo doesn't come to teach you what the boar was, it's simply an exemption. Which is that the boar says, anything that falls in there, you're chayav for. Mita, nezek, you're chayav. There's an exemption, vameiti elo teaches you that you have to be kedei lahamit. The boar has to be deep enough to kill in order for you to be responsible for killing an animal. But otherwise, you wouldn't be responsible. So that's a dispensation to say that if it's lower than 10, you don't have to pay. But both of them are learned out of v'nafal shama shor v'chamor. That's the way Rashi learns in the second Lashon. The Rabbeinu Tam makes a suggestion over here, which is that the stam boar in the Torah is very deep. Rashi over here, which seems to indicate that a stam boar is 10 tefachim deep. And then, v'nafal shama, and it makes no differentiation between nezek or mita, and therefore you're chayav. The akei nira, the faresh, the stam bor amok harbe. That a regular bor is very deep. It's richi bor, v'meiti elo. And you need both the bor and the meiti elo. Tilokti bor, havamina called the kotil. Anything that kills, you'll be responsible. Afilo ingbo kadei lamit. V'ikti bor, havamina dafka bor, v'lo shiach umeara. The gzerata katuvu. So he says, if you had just vameiti elo, anything that kills, you'd be responsible for. If I just had the word boar, I would have thought a boar in particular, the pasuk makes you chayav for a pit, but not other things that are like a boar, like a cave or a shiach. It's an area that has a depth that's built up by bricks. You wouldn't be responsible there, therefore I need both of them. In the end, the Rabbeinu Tam suggests that the reason we learn out Ted and Yud is all misvara. It's all a logical argument. I need boar, I need vameiti elo. And how does the Gemara know that Yud is this and Ted is that? Svara. That's all logical argument. He brings finally from the Yushalmi, which says that the word bor appears twice in the Pasuk, and therefore it references to borot, because it says, t'chiv tachish bor, okich re'ish bor. So why repeat the word bor? It could have said, b'chiv tach v'chiich re'ish bor. Why does it write the word bor twice? To teach you there's two different types of borot. Now, there are all sorts of drashot that are made on it, but you should just know that one of the borot, bor, is written malay, bet vav resh. The other one is written bet resh, chaser. So therefore, some of the drashot are, there are two types of borot. There's a full bor, and there's a less full bor. So one bor that does the killing, and one bor that does the nizakin, that type of drashot. The two words bor, that's what the Yushalmi uses, the fact that it has the word bor twice, that's how you know that there are two. Ella, what is the toladot bor? Avno sakino umaso shinichan b'rshut rabim. He left, he's carrying something along, and he puts him down in Rishut Rabim. So he creates a takala, he creates a stumbling block inside of the Rishut HaRabim by placing his possessions down in the Rishut HaRabim. He placed down his rock, his knife, or his load down in the Rishut HaRabim. Veziku, and then they cause damage. Hey Chidami, wait, what exactly is the scenario here? Ida Afkarinu, if he was mafkir them, meaning that he disowned them, ben the Rav, ben the Shmuel, hainu bor. That is bor, meaning that's literally bor. Ida lo Afkarinu, if he did not disown them, Ida Shmuel damar kulom bibor lamadu hainu bor. If that's the Shita Shmuel, which we're going to see later on, it's Machloket Rav and Shmuel about this, it's still called bor, then it's called bor. Then it's the same shore. So now, what we've established here, that there's different forms of bor. The first form of bor, the simplest form of bor, is what the Torah means by bor. It means a cistern. It means something that's dug into the ground. Now, what is a bor? A bor is a problematic item in the Rishut HaRabim that is likely to cause damage to people who are traversing the Rishut HaRabim. So that could be true of a pit. That could also be true of you leaving your items out in the Rishut HaRabim. If you leave something that causes people to trip, causes people to be damaged, then you have essentially accomplished bor. The one unique quality of bor is the fact that it is not yours. If you dig a hole in the Rishut HaRabim, just because you dug a hole doesn't make it into yours. It still remains Rishut HaRabim. If you go out into the road and you dig a hole in the road or on the sidewalk, doesn't change the sidewalk or the road to yours. It still remains the Rishut HaRabim. So one of the properties of a bor is that you actually don't own it. We know from the Gemara Pesachim, as well as later on in the Masechta, that the Torah put it into your possession to be responsible for it, despite the fact that it's not yours. You dug the hole, you're going to be responsible for it, even though it's not yours. So that's a unique quality of bor. So that's what the Gemara says here. If it's his item that's in the Rishut HaRabim, and he disowned it, then it looks exactly like bor, which is that you have something where I don't own it anymore, but I'm the responsible party for it being there or being a problem in the Rishut HaRabim. Just like when I dug a pit in the Rishut HaRabim, I'm the responsible party for causing that damage to be there. So too, if I leave my things in the Rishut HaRabim, even though I've disowned them, I'm responsible because I put the item there that's going to cause the damage. So that's what the Gemara says here. If it's Avno Sakino Maso, that he was mafkir, then that looks like bor, because you disowned it, but you're the cause of the problem being there. On the other side, what happens if he does not mafkir it? He leaves the items in the Rishut HaRabim, but he remains the owner of those items. What is that subsumed under? Here you have a machloket Rav and Shmuel as to what type of damage that is. Shmuel says, bor. That's just bor. Yes, bor normally is a case where you don't own it, but this looks exactly like bor. You put something into the Rishut HaRabim, it's doing damage, and you're the one, the responsible party for it. So the fact that you own it shouldn't be any different than bor, because you own it or you don't own it. In the end, we put everything into your ownership for responsibility. So if you really do own it, then certainly it should be like bor. That's the way that Shmuel learns it, that any takala in the Rishut HaRabim has a din of bor. On the other hand, Rav says that a takala in the Rishut HaRabim is only bor when it's not yours, when it's not your possession. If it's your possession, then it becomes like shor, which is something that you own that causes damage. When we say that it's like shor, we mean it's like keren. We don't mean like shein and regel, because shein and regel are patur b'shut HaRabim, which we'll discuss a little later on today's daf, but they're patur in the Shut HaRabim. So when Rav says it's like shor, he means it's like keren. And even though it's like keren, there's no tam and muad over here. Tam and muad are only relevant with living beings, things that can make a decision and have recurring behaviors. Inanimate objects, tam and muad, don't make any sense to differentiate. Therefore, you're going to be chayav nezek shalem from the beginning. And no, even though it's not exactly like bor, and it's not exactly like shor. Shor is kavanato lahazik, and bor is something that is hefker. So in the end, Tosfot says that you can't really learn out the avno sakino maso that he leaves in Rishut HaRabim from shor. Because shor has a unique quality, which is that kavanato lahazik. It intends to do damage. This person who leaves his things in the Rishut HaRabim doesn't necessarily intend to do damage. He's just irresponsible, and he leaves them in the Rishut HaRabim. Mm-hmm. Or he thinks, you know, I'll leave them here for a little bit, I'll come back and get them, and he forgets them. But he is a responsible party, but he didn't necessarily do it coming to the Azik. So therefore, he can't really learn it out of shor itself. And what the Rashbam says over here in the Tosafot is, in the end, he learns it out from a combination of shor and bor. It's not literally they learns it out of shor, he learns it out of a matzad. between Shor and Bor, the combination of the two, give Rav that answer. Shmuel learns it directly out of Bor. Rav learns it out of a combination of Shor and Bor. But now the Gemara will say the same thing again, which is, if it is Shor, so again, Shor we already dealt with. Karen, we already showed that the Toladot of Karen are just like their Av. So now, Maishna Bor, Shkein Tchilat Asiyato, the Nezek, the problem with the Bor, the character trait of a Bor, is that its initiation can cause damage. Its mere existence is dangerous. Umimoncha, this is very problematic. It's yours, you own it, as Tosfot says, Lav Dafka, even though the Gemara mentions Mamoncha both here and by Eish, Tosfot says that's not true. You don't have to own the Bor, and you don't have to own the Eish to be responsible for them. Ushmirat Olecha, and you're responsible for all the damage. Haninami, so too, Avnosa Kino Maso, Tchlata Siratan the Nezek, they were problematic from the moment you left the Mirshut Rabim. They are a problem. They can cause damage. Umamontcha. I go over here. It could be Mamontcha if you hold like Shmuel. But I go like Rav. Then loosely the term Mamontcha. Not Mamontcha meaning your ownership. But Mamontcha is that the Torah places it into your ownership. Ushmiratan Alecha. And you're responsible to ensure that damage doesn't happen from your possessions. So again, Elatolada Debor Kibor. The derivatives or subcategories of Bor are just like Bor. And if you think it's Shor, the Toladot are just like Shor. V'chi kama Rav Papa, a Toladot de Maveh. Must be that Rav Papa was speaking about Maveh. My Nihu. What is Maveh? Aside from the fact, yeah, that we're now down to Maveh, but what is exactly Maveh? Either Shmuel, Damar, Maveh, Zoshein. Shmuel thinks the word Maveh refers to the damage of Shein. Haukimna, Toladot de Shein, Kishein. You already told me that derivatives or subcategories of Shein are just like the Av of Shein. Either Rav, Damar Maveh Ze Adam. According to Rav who says Maveh in the Mishnah refers to Adam HaMazik, my Avot, my Toladot, Itbe. What is a Av by Adam HaMazik and what is a Tolada by an Adam HaMazik? B'chi Teima Av Ne'ur Tolada Yashein. You would say Av is when he's awake and he does damage. Tolada is when he's sleeping and does damage. Vatznan. We have a Mishnah later on in the Masechta. Adam Mu'ad Le'olam. Adam is considered to be a walking disaster, a walking problem. Just anything that he does is damage that he is responsible for. Ben Er, Ben Yashen. That's whether he's awake, whether he's sleeping. Ella, so what is a Tolada then? If awake and sleeping, we make no differentiation. We say we're your responsible party, that you can't call one an Av and a Tolada because the Mishnah groups them together as a single responsibility, which is Adam HaMazik. Ela, a Keicho v'Neo. It has to do with the Keicho Neo. Rashi says here, Keicho is saliva, Neo is mucus. Tosafot takes issue with that, and therefore says that Keicho over here is phlegm, which is something that you need to cough up to bring the liquid up. You have to exert yourself to bring the liquid up, whereas Neo is simply saliva. That comes out without any coughing or effort. You can just gather the saliva together and spit it out. The Tosafot says that both of them have to do with liquids of the mouth. One depends on the question of how much effort you have to make to get them out. Rashi says one is talking about saliva, one's talking about mucus from the nose. Hey, Chidami, what's the scenario? Either Bahadi Gazle, Kamazke, if on their trajectory they do damage, Kocholava, that is an extension of the individual, it's his power, it's his energy that is creating the problem. So that's Adam HaMazik. Adam HaMazik is something that you throw something, a rock, you're responsible for. Here you spit, or you release some liquids from your body, you're going to be responsible for them in your koch. Ibatu denayich, if it's already landed on the ground, then ben rab ben shmuel, I know bor. Because for sure, the person is mafkirit. Nobody's going to collect their saliva after it hits the ground, so therefore, you're definitely mafkirit. If you're mafkir something, you shoot the rabim. That's a bor, according to Rav and Shmuel. If somebody comes and slips on it afterwards, that's the case of bor. So if that's the case, either it's problem of Adam HaMazik. If it's when it's in motion, then it's the classic of Adam HaMazik, and that's an av. If it's a case where it landed on the ground, it is bor. If that's the case, any derivative of maveh is maveh, which is either according to Shmuel that is talking about Shein, then we know that toledah the Shein is Shein. According to Rav, that's talking about Adam, then all the Toladot, quote-unquote, of Adam, are Adam, meaning that there's not much difference between them, and we don't see any differentiation. So now again, we've established that Toladaham ki Yotze Ben, If there are toldot, they all look like the avot. So where's this case of toldot and lav ki yotze ben? Where's that case that we're searching for? What about Eish? Toldot Eish, my new. What are the derivatives of Eish or subcategories of Eish? Ilema avno sakino maso sheni chan barosh gagol. He put them on his roof. He put some of his property on his roof. Benaflu beruach mitzuya. And then a regular wind comes along and blows them away. Veziku. And they did damage. Hey chidomi. What was the scenario? If they damaged in their trajectory, meaning that they're blown off the roof, and in that movement they do damage, hainu esh. That is esh. Maishna esh. De koach acher murav behen. Esh involves an outside force that gives it the power to do damage. So esh, when the wind comes along, the wind moves the esh so that it travels from one place to the other and does damage. Or if there is other fuel for the fire that it catches, that's what allows the fire to move. So to over here, umamoncha. Again, here Tosfot notes it's not necessarily your mamon. If you took a third party's fire and lit someone's field on fire, you'd be responsible for that. So that's necessarily have to be mamoncha ushmirato alecha, and you're responsible for it. Haninami koach acher murav behen. The reason that these items are moving is because a wind caught them and took them into flight. Umimoncha to your possession ushmiratan alecha. And you are responsible to it. El toladad esh keesh. A derivative of esh seems to be exactly like esh. So over here, there are two things to note. One is, what does the ruach mitzuya do for you over here? The fact that you have a ruach mitzuya, Rashi says, di'i ava beruach she'ena mitzuya habayonis. If it was a ruach she'ena mitzuya, then you can't be held responsible, because v'lo mechayev, ava beruach mitzuya ave toladad esh, or esh nami a ruach molicha. Or in essence, what Rashi seems to indicate is, one is something that you could have anticipated, which is a ruach mitzuya you could have anticipated, and therefore you're responsible because you didn't take care of what should have been anticipated. The other end, ruach she'ena mitzuya is something that you couldn't have anticipated, therefore we do not hold you responsible. So Rashi views koach acher murav bo as a chumra, which is, it's something that we make you responsible for because of the fact that you should have anticipated the outcome that a normal wind would come. If a normal wind can take this into flight, then you didn't take the proper precautions over here. Tosafot back on Ben Amud Aleph looks at koach acher murav bo is something different. Deen ishum koach acher murav bo veino lech ledato. Koach acher murav bo means that it's something that doesn't go with your input. It's happening by itself. So Tosafot sees koach acher murav bo as being a kula that is associated with Eish. Eish is this unusual hezek where, even though you have nothing to do with its moving, and it's moving on its own volition or from some exogenous variables that are affecting it, nevertheless you're responsible, we're going to make you chayav, that's a kula by Eish, that's a strange thing, that despite the fact that you're not causing it to move, you are responsible. Rashi sees koach acher murav bo as being something that makes you responsible here because you should have anticipated the koach acher that is coming. So just the difference in the way that Tosfot and Rashi viewed what the koach acher murav bo. Is the koach acher murav bo what making you responsible? That's what Rashi is saying. Versus Tosfot is saying that that would be a reason to exempt you. Nevertheless, the Torah says you are chayav despite the fact that you aren't the one that is causing it to move. So now the Gemara is in a bind, which is now we've gone through all the avot and zikin. And so far, all the derivatives or subcategories are exactly like the avot. So what's left here? Ella, v'chikama rapapa, atolada de rego. Rego? Haukimna, atolada de rego, karego. The Gemara says, no, it's talking about rego. What do you mean it's talking about rego? We already, just before, we established that the tolada rego is exactly like rego. So what are you talking about? So the Gemara says, it's b'chatzi nezek tzrorot. Tehilchata gmirala. There is a halacha, the Moshe Misinai, which is that an animal, when it's walking, as it's walking, it kicks pebbles or stones that shoot out from underfoot. Those items that cause damage, you only pay chatzi nezek. You only pay half the damage that is done by it. V'amai kari la tolada de rego. Well then, why is it called a tolada of rego? What is about it that makes it connected to rego? Now, just by the fact that it's walking, doesn't mean it's going to be rego. Because we find a rego can be a bi'ita, can be karen. It depends on the nature of what's happening. Just because it's associated with the leg doesn't mean it's going to be the nezek of rego, because we had kicking before, which is a tolada of keren. So what makes it that you calling it a tolada of rego? So it says, l'shalem min aliyah. tell you that you're responsible to pay from the aliyah. This is an expression or a term that, again, will come up in the Gemara later on, that when it comes to nezek of a tam, an animal that has not frequently damaged and is only chayav chatzi nezek, over there the Gemara is going to dash from the psukim that the maximum exposure that the mazik has is the value of the animal that did the damage. That's what's called chatzi nezek migufo. The animal that did the damage is the maximum exposure you have. On the other hand, by mu'ad, your exposure is min aliyah. Min aliyah means that all your assets are responsible for the payment here. Even if it exceeds the value of the animal that did the damage, all your assets are culpable or responsible towards the payment. That's called min aliyah. So over here you have a case of chatzi nezek. So you would have thought chatzi nezek, like by tam, should be mi gufo. The fact that it's min aliyah shows you that it's not like Karen, but more like regel. By regel and shein and other forms of damage, there's no question that you are fully responsible and all your assets are responsible for the damage. Only by Karen, by tam, that's not the case. So the fact that it says l'shalem min aliyah shows you that it must be that it is like regel and not like Karen. Vami bayi bayi rova. Didn't Rava query as what the halacha is here? The bayi rova, chazi nezek tzorot, migufo mishalem, o min aliyah mishalem. Which one? He doesn't know which one it is. The Rava mi bayile, Rapapa b'shitale, enochanami. Rava had it as a question. Rapapa thought it was simple that it definitely came out of aliyah. It's interesting and it's somewhat difficult. Rava is Rapapa's Rebbe. So Rava had a question about it, yet a student, Rapapa, was clear on this matter. So the Rava did mi bayile. So according to Rava, where he doesn't know whether it is min aliyah or mi gufo, amai karila tola da de regel. So then why does he call it a derivative or subcategory of regel? The potra b'reshut harabim, to tell you that you are a patur in reshut harabim. So now, Tosfot asks over here, amai pshita le tfei milishalem min aliyah. Why is he so certain that you're patur in the reshut harabim, whereas when it comes to paying from aliyah, Rava doesn't know if that's the case. Yesh lamar, he says, kevin de min adin ayah mishalem nezek shalem, since normally you would pay nezek shalem. Va'ati hilchata, and the malacha l'moshe minisai comes and says, l'moshem alechatzi nezek, you only pay half the amount. So you see, imkain ati hilchata lahakel v'lo lahachmir, because it's coming to go the kula and not the chumra. Therefore, we would assume that you are patur in the reshut rabim. We see that the Torah is coming to be mekel by the case of chatzi nezek tzrorot, and therefore Rava says for sure you're patur in reshut rabim. But shalem in aliyah, which is a chumra, I'm not sure about, because the Torah is mekel over here. Maybe it should also be mekel in the form of payment, or what asset is responsible for that. That I don't know about. But patur mishut rabim, that I can understand, because that's the kula. And it's clear here that the Torah is trying to be lenient on you. All right, so let's understand this. We have chatzi nezek tzrorot, which now the Gemara is holding up as this one unique case where todotehem lav kiyotzeben. You have a toladah, you have a derivative, which is not exactly like the av, because the toladah pays chatzi nezek, the av pays nezek shalem. So they're not exactly alike. Yet, it is a subcategory of regel. How or why is it a subcategory of regel? Rashi claims the reason is because the halacha of the Moshe Misinai is that it's mamona velo knas. That the compensation made here is a monetary compensation, meaning that you're really responsible for the full amount, and the Torah gave you a dispensation to pay half. But it means that what you're paying is true compensation or restitution, and therefore it's called mamona. On the other hand, chatzi nezek by the Karen happens to be machloket later on in the Gemara, but Rashi is assuming, like the Manda Amar, that chatzi nezek paying for Karen is a knas. It's a penalty to stop you from, or to prevent you from allowing this to happen in the future. We want you to watch your animal, therefore we penalize you. Underlying that assumption is that you really are patur the gamre. You should not be responsible whatsoever for this tam, because you couldn't have expected it. It was an unexpected activity of the animal. So therefore, we should not hold you culpable at all. The Torah comes and imposes a fine on you of chatzi nezek to say, listen, you got to watch your animal. Even though it wasn't anticipated, you still got to take extra precautions. So we're going to penalize you with chatzi nezek. It's called knas. But therefore, Rashi says the reason that tzrorot are a toladav regel and not karen is because regel is mamona, and so too is tzrorot is mamona. Karen is knas. And therefore, chatzi nezek tzrorot cannot be a derivative or a toladah of Karen. That's the way Rashi learns it. Tosafot, on the other hand, says, amai karile toladah de regel. Afagav de dummy the regel, even though it's similar to regel, And you would have assumed it's regel because it's the leg that's doing it, it's kicking out from the leg. Nevertheless, it should have been its own category. So the way Tosafot views it is, the other option was not to make it a toledav keren. The other option was to make it its own independent av. It should be its own category. So why is it not its own category and subsumed under regel? Well, it's subsumed under regel because that's a natural toledav because it's done by the leg. The reason that it may not be a toledav regel is because chatzi nezek, make it its own category. Why don't we make it its own category? Because it has these trappings that are very similar to regel. Patur b'shut rabim or the shalei min aliyah. So Rashi views the option as being either it's keren or regel. Tosafot views the option as being either its own category or regel. So now you have here a toledav, chatzi nezek tzorot, which is a toledav regel for the reasons that we listed here. And it still does not look like the av, which is the fact that you pay chatzi nezek and not nezek shalem. Now that we've gone through all of the different items here, I just want to note this as an aside. And again, as we go through them, we're going to see this again of how do we associate these items with the modern day world, which is that we talked about bor. Bor, which is a cistern, is the equivalent of the modern day manhole that is out in the Rishut HaRabim. People need to put in manholes for sewers, for wiring, and for all different things that are put in the Rishut HaRabim. So we need them. They're a necessity to be done or to be dug in the Rishut HaRabim. But you have to take the proper precautions. You have to cover them. You have to have a proper cover on them so that people do not get damaged by them. If you don't do that, then you're responsible for the fact that somebody fell in or somebody was damaged by such a bor. That's the modern day bor. Just like in their day, you needed cisterns to capture water. You needed cisterns for whatever reason. So there might be a reason to dig them in their Rishut HaRabim. But once you've dug them, you've got to protect them so other people are not affected by it. Eish, which we spoke about, is fire. In their day, that was the major fuel for anything that they did. The eish of today is likely electricity. You have to wire your house properly. You have to utilize the electricity properly. If it's done in a improper manner, which causes something, a fire to happen for it to cause damage, and then it damages your friend's apartment or a friend's house, then that's a responsibility. You have to, the same way you have to take care of precautions when you're utilizing something like Aish, which has huge utility, but tremendous danger. So to electricity has huge utility, but tremendous danger that is associated with it. Shor is the equivalent of the modern day car. It's a means of transport. It's a means of hauling things. It's a means to get from one place to the other, just like the animals of that day. There's utility to it, but the utility comes with risks, which is sometimes it does damage. Sometimes it can cause problems, even though the majority of its usage is for something that is positive. So there you have shor. Chatzi nezek tzorot is equivalent when the animal is walking along its way. It sometimes by naturally walking, it kicks up stones that go flying. Cars, trucks, when they're driving along, stones or things that are on the road shoot out from under the tires of those cars. So again, that's the equivalent of chatzi nezek tzorot, which are items that have a trajectory that come out from underneath the power or the weight of the item that's there. It brings it into the modern era, so that's something that all of this Bava Kamma comes to life with this. And again, as we go through it, I will try to explicate on each of these items to show you how they match with the modern day phenomenons like cars and how they match with shore. We'll get there once we're dealing in the depths of these items. So now the Gemara goes back to the issue of my maveh. In the Mishnah it says maveh, and we had a machloket which we mentioned before in passing. Now the Gemara goes back to discuss that machloket, which is Rav Amar maveh ze adam, that's adam mazik. Shmuel Amar maveh ze ashein, refers to shein. Rav Amar maveh ze adam dichtiv, because the pasuk says Amar shomer. The shomer, the guard says, Ata boker v'gam laila. The morning will come, so will the night. Im tivayun be'ayu. If you desire it to come, just make the request. Or make your request. Whatever your request is, make your request. So now you see that tibayun bayu is something that a man does. It's something that a person does. A person makes a request. A person has a desire. A person inquires about things. And therefore you see bayu is referring to Adam. Whereas Shmuel Amar Maveh Ze Ashein Dichtiv, because it says, Eich Nechpesu Esav Niv'u Matzpinotav. How they searched by Esav and they revealed his hoards or his hidden items. My mashma, how does that have to do with shame? Can the targum Rav Yosef, as Rav Yosef brings the targum, and we mentioned this numerous times, that Rav Yosef was a sagi nahor, was blind, and Rashi notes in many places, because he was a blind, he was an expert in the targum, because dvarim shebichtav, you can only learn them bichtav, looking inside. So therefore Rav Yosef was blind, had to use the targum instead of the actual psukim themselves. Tosafot over here wholesale rejects that in Rashi and says it's not the case. Says there are people who say that and it's absolutely wrong. Rav Yosef was an expert in Targum because he was an expert in Targum. He lived in Babel, he knew Aramaic, and he was an expert in Targum. And the truth is that Targum preceded Rav Yosef because the Targum Yonatan brings this Targum down. It's attributed to Rav Yosef because he happened to be an expert in Targum. But he may not even have been the originator of the Targum, he just happened to know it. And Tosafot says, the reason that I think Rashi, or the way that it explained other places in Shas is wrong, is because, Eid Lasod Hashem, Heferu Toratecha. The Gemara invokes the principle that when there's no other choice, that we have to allow or give dispensations. That the Gemara uses for Torah Shebaal Peh. How come Torah Shebaal Peh is allowed to be written down? Because if we don't write it down, it's all going to be lost. So you can invoke that same principle with a Suma, with a blind person. If you're going to tell a blind person they can't learn Chumash, and they can only learn it through Targum, then you're going to lose everything. Maybe they're never going to learn the Kra inside. They're never going to learn Tanakh. So that's problematic. It's Eid Lasod Hashem Eferu Toratecha. In that case, we'll make an exception and let them learn Baal Peh. So Tosafot does not see that as being a reason why Rav Yosef was an expert in Targum. Now, Rav Yosef says, Echdein it balish, Esav it galin, and Machimerohi. So now the translation into Aramaic is, Echdein it balish. It balish, the modern word balash, is like a spy, or someone who does an investigation, an inspector. So over here it means, Echdein it balish. It balish is like nechpesu, the chapes, to search for something. Esav, it galin, which is nibu. Nibu means to be revealed. Matzimorhi is matzpunav, those things that are hidden, those things that are kept from the eye. So you see that the word nivu means itgalin, to be revealed. And Rashi over here says, well, that's associated with the shein which is sometimes revealed and sometimes that is covered. Akin to what Rashi said about galal, that was the meaning of the word galal. The galot was the reason for the word galal, meaning shein before. Rashi brings that. Others bring that itgalin, it's the one item that has to be revealed to do damage. Regel, Karen, they're all exposed in the beginning. Shane is the only thing that's normally covered, but has to be revealed to do damage. So therefore, he sees that as being referring to Shane. Rav, my time, although Amar Kishmuel. Why doesn't Rav say like Shmuel that it's talking about Shane? Amalacha miktani niv'eh. Doesn't say niv'eh, because there the word is nib'u. That's the word he brings the pasuk from. Ushmuel, my time, although Amar Kirav. Why doesn't Shmuel say like Rav? Amalacha miktani bo'eh. The Mishnah doesn't say bo'eh. The Mishnah says mav'eh. So, if you're quoting for the pasuk says, im tivayun bi'ayu, that is the active form of the word, bo'eh. So, neither of them have a direct proof to the word mav'eh. Both of them have proofs of a similar type of word, but it's not in the same formulation or conjugation as the Mishnah. So, michtei, cry, lokamar daiki, velokamar daiki. The Gemara says, let's call it a stalemate with regards to the psukim, because the psukim are not exactly like either of them. Neither of them have an exact match to what's written in the Mishnah. So Rav, my time, alo mar kishmuel. So Rav, why doesn't he hold like Shmuel? It must be a logical argument. What's that? Tana shor, v'chol milei de shor. The Mishnah opened up with shor. When it opens up with shor, it means it covers everything subsumed under the category of shor. That means Shane, Regel, Karen, they're all included under shor. Well, if that's the case, maveh has to be something else. What is that? That's Adam. Shmuel nami atana leshor. Well, Shmuel, doesn't the word shor appear in the Mishnah in the beginning? Rav Yehuda atana shor lekarno umaveh leshino. Rav Yehuda says Shmuel breaks down the avot of shor into separate categories. Whereas Rav sees them subsumed under this big category called shor, Shmuel sees them being independent, which is, you have shor, and you have Maveh. One of them is Karen, right now. The Gemara is going to change its mind in tomorrow's daf. Right now, Shor is for Karen, and Maveh is for Shane. And obviously, you have to ask the question, what about Regel? Where did Regel go in this? V'alchi Kamar. Now, he explains the Mishnah. Remember, the Mishnah began to say, the first line of the Mishnah, after it gave you the list of the Avot Nezikin, is, Lo Ari Maveh Kare Ashor. that the maveh is not like the shore, and the shore is not like the maveh. So now he explains it. Valchi kamar. Lo yirai yekeren, shein anala hezeko. Kirai yashen, like shein, sheyesh anala hezeka. Velo rai yashen, shein kamanato lazik. Kirai yekeren, shein kamanato lazik. So now the way that Rashi explains it is, kolmar, ikatov rachmana keren, had the Torah just written the word keren, the chayav, lo atya shein minei. I wouldn't have learned shein out of it. To Karen, ain anal ezeko, because Karen does not have anal ezeko. So what I would say is, the Torah told me that Karen is chayav, I would not have learned from that Shane, because Shane has anal ezeko. Anal ezeko is an impetus for the animal to do something where a bali might have more trouble guarding it. The animal goes to run to get food or sees food, it's something that's somewhat out of control of the balim, and maybe you would think they are a patur over there. The same thing by the case of, had you just written Shane, I would not have extrapolated Karen from it. If by Shane that it's Ain Kamanato Azik, which is it has no intent to do damage, so therefore the Balim are responsible because it didn't do something so unusual. The other hand, by Karen, where it's Kamanato Azik, there maybe you would think that you were not responsible because the animal did something crazy. It went out and intended to do damage. How can I prevent that? Tosfot on the other hand says, Below Rey Karen Shane Anala Zeko, Upshia Pasha. There's a Poshea here, Shailo Lishmor Shoro. He should have regarded his shore, shebekal ayelo l'shamro, she'en duchaka l'chazik. It's not pressing out to do damage, kevin she'en anah l'zeka. So Tosafot sees it focusing on the Karen aspect, which is, by Karen it's easy for you to guard it, because there's no other outside variable that's causing it to do something unusual. So therefore you're a pushea now, because you didn't deal with the animal. Rashi, on the other hand, sees that en anah l'zeko is something that prevents you from learning it out of shame. Tosfot says that there's a reason to say that you're onus and not a pusheya. Whereas Rashi sees it as a chumra, which doesn't allow you to learn it from the other item. And the same in the verse, which is that, according to Tosfot, I just written shame, over there, you are a pusheya if you didn't guard it, because there the animal didn't go crazy and wanted to damage. But by Karen, where it's trying to damage something, which is a crazy behavior, maybe over there you're an onus. So Tosfot sees that the Kamanato Lazik and Ein and Hana Lezeka as being reasons to be poter you, because those are issues that make you into an onus instead of a pusheya. Rashi, on the other hand, sees these items as being a chumra, and if it's a chumra, then you can't learn it out from the other item, meaning that chumra makes it that can't learn one from the other because they are different. Then the Gemara says, well, if it's a chumra, v'lav kav chomeru. Why is it a kavachomer? Ma shein she'ein kamanato lazik. If shein doesn't have intent to do damage, chayav, and it's still chayav, karen she'kamanato lazik, lo kol she'kein, then karen where you have intent to do damage, then it makes sense that you should be responsible. So now for Rashi, it's easy to understand why the Gemara is asking that this is a chumra, and should be a kavachomer. And as Rashi notes, the kavachomer goes both ways. The Gemara only notes it by shein, but the same is true as karen. If karen is ein anala zeka, then certainly shame where it's anala zeka, you should be responsible. So for Rashi, it's easy to understand. The havamin is harder to understand according to Rashi. The maskana here that you're going to say it's a kava chomer makes a lot of sense. You're talking about a chomra. According to the Tosafot, the havamin it makes sense because in the case where there isn't this outside variable causing the animal to damage, you're a posheya for not taking care of it. If you have this outside force that's causing it to do something unusual, then maybe you're an onus. But then what's the kava chomer? Because if that was a reason to be patur, now you're saying it's a kal v'chomer, because now the Gemara is viewing it as a chumra, not as a kula. So istrich, I need it. Sagadat chamin amidah dehave eved v'ama. I would have thought it's similar to the case of eved v'ama. Rashi claims this has to do with a Mishnah later on in the Masechta, which says that isha ve'eved kiatan ra. That with an isha and an eved, their interacting with them or coming into contact with them is problematic. If they do damage, they are pturim. If someone does damage to them, they are chayav. So that's what it's referring to. Tosafot, on the other hand, says it's referencing a Mishnah in Yadayim, which says that in Eved and Ama, one is patur for damage done by an Eved and Ama. Eved and Ama, laf avagav de kamanatam azik, even though they have intent to do damage, afilachi ptire, still they are considered to be patur. So just because you have kamanatol azik is not a reason to say you're chayav. Because here we have an example of something that's kamanato lazik, and yet you are patur. A maidservant or a servant, and they go out and intentionally do damage, the owner is not held accountable for that. Hakanami lo shnas, so say same thing over here. Just because Karen is coming to Azik is not a reason to make them chayav. It might be a reason to say you are a patur. We have examples of a case where you have coming to Azik and it's still patur. And Ravashi, atu eviv amah lav taima rabba itko. Wait a minute. Eviv amah, the Mishnah in Yadayim gives a specific reason as to why you are patur. Shema yaknitenu rabbo. Ve'elech yadlik kidisho shel chaveiro. Because what's going to happen is if the servant or maidservant gets mad at their owner, they know how to get back at them. You know how they're going to take revenge? They're going to go to the guy's neighbor, light his field on fire, and then the owner is going to have to pay out thousands and thousands of shekel dollars to make restitution to his neighbor because this Eved got mad at him. So now the Eved is given so much power because he can make his master responsible. Every day he can cause him such a huge loss that either the owner is going to disown him and get rid of him, or the owner is going to have to change his behavior now because this guy can cause him so much trouble. So in order to take that ace card out of the hand of the Eved, we say that the owners are patur when the Eved acts in this way. Now Tosfot asks over here, wait a minute, this is the second half of the Mishnah in Yadayim. How did the questioner not know that the second half of the Mishnah gives you the reason why you're patur over there? And the reason you're patur has nothing to do with Kabanato Lahazik. It has to do with the fact that we don't want to make the Adon responsible. Tosfot also says, Vod Kasha, another problem is, the Eviv Amak, Shein Kabanato Lahazik, Nami Ptirei. Even if they don't intend to do damage, they still are Turim. The questioner knew this reason. But his question derived from the fact that Eviv Amar Patur across the board. They're Patur whether they had intent to do it, whether they didn't have intent to do it. So Afagav the Lo Shayach Shema Yaknitena Rabo Danusu. There's no reason to say Shemi Yaklidena Rabo because the guy is an anus. He did it by accident. And yet there the owner is still not responsible. That shows you that the main reason can't be to prevent damage to the owner because even when in Kavanatam Nazik, we still say that they are Pturim. So you see that the reason brought in the Mishnah is not the primary reason they are Pturim, but it's just a sidebar. In the end, what Ravashi says is, no, that is the primary reason for their being patur, because if you say that in the case where they do it unintentionally, you're chayav, and when they do it intentionally, you're patur, what's the Eved going to say every time? I did it unintentionally. I did it by accident. And then he's going to end up getting his adon to be chayav. So the reason in the end, that's what Ravashi says in the end. It looks like there's only a reason for when he does it intentionally, but not when he does it unintentionally, and that makes it not be the primary reason why you are patur. And that's what the questioner was saying, Kavanato Lahazik is patur. Ravashi in the end says, no, the reason is the reason for both, when he does it intentionally and unintentionally, because if we allow him, we make you chayav when it's unintentional, then the Eved is always going to say it was unintentional, and you'll end up in the same problem. So Shema Yakniten Rabo is enough of a reason for both sides over here, and that's what Ravashi is clarifying. Ela Pari Chochi. This is the way that the Mishnah should read now. Lo raya Karen she kavanato lazik, kareya Shane she ain't kavanato lazik. Had you just written Karen, this is the exact opposite of how it read it before. Before it read it as being a reason to be responsible, as a reason to be the kula, now it reads it as a reason to be responsible or the chumrah. Which is, lo raya Karen she kavanato lazik, kareya Shane she ain't kavanato lazik. Had you just written Karen, you wouldn't learn Shane out of it. Because Karen, the reason you're chayav is because kavanato lehazik. Shane, which isn't kavanato lehazik, you would think is patur. Therefore, I have to write Shane. V'lo raya Shane, had I only written Shane in the Torah, sheish ana lehazeko, there he's getting benefit from it. I mean, the driving force of the animal doing the damage is that he's hungry or he wants to do something, get hana, then maybe that's why you're responsible. Kuraya Karen, Shane ana lehazeko, maybe there by the Karen where there's no hana'ah for the animal, maybe over there you won't be responsible because it's something that you could not foresee. So, v'regel, my shayire. So then what do you do with regel? You took care of Karen, you took care of Shane. What happened to regel? That's what the extraneous language in the Mishnah that says, kishazik chava mazik. When the item or the individual does damage, they are responsible for doing that damage. Latuya regel. That is to include regel. Now, as Rashi and Tosfot point out, that's not our Mishnah that we just read, is the upcoming Mishnah. The upcoming Mishnah has the same exact line as the first Mishnah, and that is superfluous. That's where we learn out regel from. We're going to include it from that. Where it says, Litnei Behedjo. Why don't you write it explicitly? You write Karen explicitly in the Mishnah. You write Shane explicitly in the Mishnah. Why don't you write regel explicitly in the Mishnah? And therefore, the Gemara says that cannot be the explanation of Shmuel. Ella, and we'll stop with this, Amarava, Tana Shor the Raglo, Umaveda Shino. So now, Rava alters what is going to become the Shita of Shmuel and says, the word Shor in the Mishnah means Raglo, the word Maveh means Shane. So now you're going to be missing Karen. That's not a problem. Karen is different than Shane and Raglo, and we know that because you have Chatzi Nezek, you have other things that are associated with Karen. That's less problematic to leave out of the Mishnah because Karen is different than Shane and Raglo. So that's what, according to Shmuel, the Mishnah says, Shor is Rego, and Maveh is Shane. According to Rav, Shor is Karen, Shane, and Rego, and Maveh is Adam. Okay, we're gonna stop here. 14 lines down on the top of Dalet Amud Aleph.